right, we got the man, the myth, the legend, Kelly Ford, K Ford Ratings. Kelly, I was joking with you off air. This one, I know football's right around the corner when we get you annually to talk about your SEC projections. How are you, my friend?
Mike, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, as always. This is one of my favorite podcasts, favorite shows to come on every single year. Everybody knows the SEC is the best in college football, and I'm here to talk about it with you.
Yeah, and hey, before we get into the numbers, now I always love to clarify because, I know you're no stranger to social media and the contempt that's going to be led your way. This is not every piece of data you're about to throw at us. This is not Kelly Ford. This is a K Ford. Can you explain the difference for maybe first-time listeners here?
Absolutely. So what we're going to go over today is what I call the K Ford rating. So it's a power rating model that I've generated. It's very similar to Bill Connolly's SP Plus or Brian Fromoh's FEI. Perhaps the most notorious predictive power rating model out there is ESPN's FPI. I know people like to have a lot of fun with that every year, but that's what I'm doing with the K Ford ratings. I'm trying to determine how strong is every team. And today we're going to talk about the 16 SEC teams. How strong are these teams relative to the rest of college football? Because once we know that, we're able to make all sorts of projections, game projections, you know, win expectancies for every single game, season win totals, conference championship races, playoff races. All of those types of conversations can be had if we have a power rating model that we trust. I certainly trust mine. And so, yes, I'll be talking about the power ratings. And Mike, I have gotten better, I think, over the years, separating Kelly Ford, the person, and my opinion of these teams, and K Ford ratings, the model. I use the model as a starting point, but certainly the model's not perfect. It's going to miss. It is right more than it's wrong. I think that's why a lot of people have latched onto it, but it's not perfect. And so there could be things that we disagree on, even myself and the model, and certainly happy to talk about those as well as we go.
Yeah, and I love that you've added this, Kelly. I'm going to throw it up here on the screen for those watching on YouTube, of course, but man, to say you didn't do your homework, I mean, you've backed it up and you've done everything. So I love that you got this key, essentially. But before we, you know, we don't have to hit on all these. We ain't got all night. But is there one particular? Because I'm already starting to see a lot of people. They're like, what in the world? How do we have this number one special teams? Is there anything here that is unique to K Ford and why you went this extra step to make this key here?
Yeah, so Mike, the key that you have here on the screen, and it's pinned on my X account at K Ford Ratings, just for clarity, because people would ask, you know, Kelly, what do all the numbers mean? What do all the colors mean? This outlines everything in my team projection graphics. And I'm in the process of rolling out team projection graphics for all 136 FBS teams, doing it kind of in the order of power ratings with some polls on Twitter, which has been fun. Had to do Tennessee as the example for you, Mike. I mean, I did it just for you. I knew you'd love it. But no, for me, really, the things that I get asked about the most are probably schedule difficulty. So as you can see in the top left corner, the schedule difficulty for Tennessee, it's 25. That means Tennessee, by my numbers, my preseason version one power ratings, Tennessee plays the 25th most difficult schedule among Power Four teams. In the offense, you see number 34. That means Tennessee plays, on average, the 34th most difficult collection of opposing FBS offenses. So if you add up all the offenses that Tennessee's defense is going to face this year, it's the 34th most difficult collection of those offenses in Power Four. So the special teams, number one, what that's saying is, by my numbers, right now, as things project, no team is going to face a more difficult opposition on the special teams unit than Tennessee this year. Now, I should clarify, special teams, especially at this point in the season, like, that weight assigned to the special teams units in the power rating model is almost negligible right now. And it pretty much remains that way for most of the season, unless you have, you know, a special teams unit that's in the top 10 or the bottom 10, then you might see it start to affect your overall team power rating. But special teams is such a small portion of what we're looking at here, because it comprises such a small number of the total plays that you have in a football game. So that's an area I get a lot of questions about here during the preseason. One thing that is specific to K Ford ratings, Mike, you asked that, the WS, the watchability scores over kind of middle right, just left of the overall projections for, you know, percent chance to win at least or equal to as many games, right there in the kind of middle right, WS, that's watchability score. That is the weighted average of projected quality and competitiveness. So I'm looking at what's the projected spread of this game using my power rating, and what are the two teams involved? What's their average K-Ford power rating? It's on a scale of 0 to 10. 10 is like the most watchable. Oh my gosh, you can't miss this. 0 is, well, it's still a college football game, but you're not probably going to get too excited about it. You can see for Tennessee, the Georgia game's a 9.9. The Oklahoma game's a 9.7. The Florida game's a 9.7. And the Alabama game's a 9.2. Those are the games that are a 9.0 or better. And those are the games that, in my opinion, even if you're a casual college football fan, those are the ones that you just can't afford to miss. So watchability score is a fun piece that I've kind of created as we've gone here. And certainly not the only one doing watchability scores, but I don't think that's as widespread as just a, you know, a general power rating model like a K-Ford ratings or the other that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you've explained this on this channel before, but again, as a refresher, the model changes week by week given new information, right? So can you talk about that and just how incredibly difficult this all is? I mean, Kelly, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, I think this would have been a lot easier. But with roster transition, with NIL, with so many things, how difficult is it to project here in the middle of June before we have any real concrete data on the 2025 season?
Yeah, it has gotten increasingly difficult in the preseason segment with all the changes that we've seen. And really, it's the roster continuity or lack thereof that causes these new difficulties and challenges. But the model does change every single week. It reacts to the games that we see, the data, the in-game data that gets fed into the model. So my process in 2025 here this fall, once the season starts, is very, very similar to what it was, you know, when I started this in 2018, 2019, like the in-season, in-game data and how that talks to the model. Yeah, I'm tweaking it. You're always back testing every summer to make sure, hey, we're still looking at the right things. They're still weighted appropriately. But that process is pretty much unchanged. However, the preseason, as we just talked about, that's what's changed pretty significantly. And so what's increased in weight is the amount of returning production, the amount that returning production is weighted in the model. So it's becoming more and more important. How much production are you returning? And it doesn't necessarily have to be from your team last year. It just means college football production. So we are capturing transfers coming in and going out of your roster. Of course, you have to have modifiers and scalers because, like, for example, Tennessee. If Tennessee brings in a transfer from Kent State, well, I'm going to downgrade that player's production because I expect him to produce less at Tennessee than he did at Kent State because the level of competition is greatly improved. If you flip that around, and if a player transfers from Tennessee to Kent State, I'm going to upgrade that production because we can expect that player to be more productive at Kent State than they were at Tennessee because the level of competition they're facing is certainly going to be different. So that has really been the biggest piece for me, just tracking where is everyone, where are they coming from. The COVID year has finally, by and large, rolled off. So that extra year of eligibility is kind of out of the system finally after all these years. But then if that's been increased in weight, something had to go down. And what has really gone down for me is how good your team or your program was last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It used to be pretty informative because roster continuity was at a level that it made it this way, that if your team was good 3 years ago, it was likely that you're still going to be good today. Now, with the roster turnover that you get and the coaches, that part, it's kind of always been here, but the coaching changes happening at such a high rate, it really doesn't matter how good Tennessee was 3 years ago as a predictor for how they're going to be this year. So we care less about how good the program has been in recent years, more about what's the production you're bringing back from college football for this upcoming year. And another thing that I've increased the weight of to account for some of this uncertainty with the players and how are all the pieces going to fit together is your coaching staff. And how long has your head coach been here? How about your offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator? And if they haven't been here long, where were they before? And did they have success? So the coaching staff input, the weight of that has been enhanced as well to try to offset some of the uncertainty that we don't know about, hey, we're bringing in all these players in the transfer portal, but this isn't a video game. It's not guaranteed that they're all just going to fit together perfectly in that puzzle.
You said a mouthful, Kelly, so let's jump into it. Projected SEC standings here via K-Ford ratings. Texas, you're just like the rest of the media, Kelly. You're buying into Texas, all there, but no, I get it. That was me last year. This year, I'm right there with you. Texas, I have him as the best team in the conference. Alabama, number two, that would surprise a lot of people. Not me necessarily. That's actually my preseason pick to win the conference. Georgia, three. LSU, four. Ole Miss, five. Tennessee, six. Texas A&M, seven. South Carolina, eight. Auburn, nine. Missouri, 10. Florida, 11. Oklahoma, 12. Arkansas, 13. Kentucky, 14. Vanderbilt, 15. And Mississippi State, 16. So, again, your model is very unique, Kelly. That's why I love it here. But can you break down the percent chance to win at least, the conference games as you have them labeled here?
Absolutely. And so this graphic, I know it's very tempting to just look at the rank and the team number and say, okay, Kelly's saying Texas is going to win the SEC and they're going to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. That is what my model is projecting right now as the most likely outcome. However, what I really like to do when looking at this is look at that average number. That's what is the model saying is the average number of regular season conference games that each team is going to win. So you can see Texas 6.7. So 6.7 wins, what 1.3 losses over the course of the 8-game schedule. Alabama 6.1, but Georgia 6.0. So right now, the difference for me in my model, looking at Alabama's 8-game conference slate and Georgia's, adjusting for their own power rating and their power ratings of their opponents, right, is only 0.1. So it's really, I would say any of those top three teams, I would consider favorites to make it to Atlanta. Then there's a little bit of a gap, right? It's down to 5.2 for LSU, Ole Miss, Tennessee, all right there. And that makes, I throw Texas A&M in kind of that second grouping as well. So really that top seven is a little bit separated then from that bottom nine. And so South Carolina then brings in that next group with Auburn, Missouri, Florida, and I throw Oklahoma in there. Then Arkansas is kind of by themselves a little bit, maybe Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, but the bottom four are certainly kind of in that grouping by themselves. So that's what I really encourage people to do is look at that average number. And then you can see over there farther to the right, you know, what's the percent chance that each of these teams wins X number of conference games. So for example, here, Tennessee, there's a 37% chance that Tennessee wins at least six SEC conference games this year. You can see that six is important right now. It's denoted with that gray outline. Based on my projections right now, 6-2 would be good enough to tie for second in the SEC conference standings. Of course, tiebreakers come into play and that can get convoluted. And so I'm not trying to go down that road right now. But what I'm suggesting is you need to be targeting at least six wins in conference play to put yourself in a position to at least be in a tiebreaker scenario for a spot in Atlanta. So that's why that six is highlighted there right now. The final thing I'll say about this, Mike, is also this is not necessarily the rank order of my power ratings, right? Georgia for me is power rated as a team higher or better than Alabama. It's close. I mean, there's not a massive difference. I have Georgia at number two, Alabama at number four as things stand right now. But because of the schedule that each of these teams plays, as we simulate the season, Alabama comes out very, very, very slightly, 0.1 wins, very slightly more or higher than Georgia in a projected conference standing. So this is not a power rating list. You see Florida all the way down there at number 11. That schedule's really, really difficult. Florida's a top 15 power rated team in my model, but because their schedule's so difficult, both overall, but specific to this graphic and conference play, you see them at number 11 in the projected conference standings.
Yeah, so again, this is all very unique, and that's why I love this so much. But we'll jump right back into it. But you just made me think of something, which this, you know, obviously this is like one of the biggest talking points in the conference. Again, I know you enjoy watching SEC. It is, in my opinion, the best conference, top to bottom. I know the Big Ten's won a couple, but. What is your thoughts? I'm gonna ask you the hot button question here, Kelly. SEC moving to 9 games or staying at 8? Not in terms of, you know, how much fun would that be in the fall? Because personally, I want to see it go to 9. Heck, if they went to 10 SEC games, I'd be fired up because we'd get so many good games in the fall. But specifically, when we're talking about the difficulty that you're asking this conference to go through to get to the college football playoff. In terms of trying to win national championships, and that is the end goal here, do you think it makes sense for the SEC to stay at 8, or do you think it makes more sense for the SEC to go to 9?
So from a purely mathematical standpoint, and that's how I'll keep it for the purposes of the model, if I look at the overall schedule difficulty of the 12-game regular season slate that all 136 teams are getting ready to play, the worst, or the easiest, I should say, the easiest schedule, 12 games of any SEC team right now, based on my version one power ratings, and this can change slightly as we build into the fall, it's Tennessee at number 25. So as things stand right now, Tennessee has the 25th most difficult schedule in the country. That's the easiest schedule in the SEC. Now, that doesn't mean that Tennessee has the easiest SEC conference slate. When you look at just those eight games, Texas is actually slightly easier than Tennessee by my numbers right now. But overall, Texas plays Ohio State in the non-conference, right? So that increases their overall schedule difficulty. Tennessee is number 25, and that's the easiest. From a mathematical standpoint, going to a ninth conference game would make these schedules more difficult because you're replacing, on average, you're replacing a non-conference game that's going to be against an opponent that is easier or less talented than a conference foe that you're going to get if you go to a ninth game. So I would say, why would the SEC do that when they already have, on average, the most difficult schedule across the board, top to bottom, in the conference? Going to a ninth game, it brings more money, brings more fan interest, all those things. Personally, it kind of hurts me a little bit because my model needs non-conference games for that interconnectivity, for the model to properly power rate each team and have those reference points and those connection points between conferences. That's why the COVID year was so hard. We didn't have any of those interconnection points. So I need more non-conference games. But if I'm the SEC, I'm pointing to the schedule difficulty numbers and saying, we're already playing a more difficult schedule. Why are we making it harder? And also, from the committee standpoint, I mean, if you look at the playoff, they, in my opinion, they've tended to count losses. And so I think if you go to another conference game, you're probably increasing the chance that your contenders are going to pick up another conference loss or another loss overall in conference play. And to date, the committee has really punished you for a higher number of losses. So until the committee proves us otherwise, and I certainly hope we can get there where they're taking a more formulaic approach or an objective model approach, until the committee gets to that point, I would be very hesitant to make a move that would potentially or probably increase the number of overall losses that my contenders have, because I don't believe the committee values that, regardless of who the loss is to. I think they see that high number of losses and they say, all right, that team's out. So I would stay at eight if I was the SEC, but I certainly understand why people around the country want them to go to nine. And I understand some of the benefits to the SEC programs and institutions themselves of going to nine.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the solution, Kelly. We just need to get you on the college football playoff selection committee. If they make that offer, you can thank me for it later.
You got it, man. I appreciate the endorsement.
All right, so let's bounce around the conference here. And again, that what you said was so vitally important there with teams like I want to start with highlight three teams one at a time, of course, but let's go Missouri, Florida, and Oklahoma, because they were at the bottom, and I can already tell their fans are clicking away at what a fool Kelly Ford is. But let's jump into it. Let's go Missouri. Can you break down the K-Ford ratings of Missouri and why they factor in a little bit lower than their fans are probably hoping for?
Certainly. So right now I've got Missouri number 22 overall in my power ratings. That's actually an improvement on last year. Year end last year, my model had Missouri number 25. Now, if you go back to 2023, Missouri was up to number 14, but certainly 25 is the second best that I have had, or sorry, 22 is the second best that I've had Missouri going back to 2019. So in the Eli Drinkwitz era, this is the second best Missouri team by my model, at least projecting coming into the year. I like the defense. The defense is number 21 for me. I think where I have a little bit of reservation, or the model has some reservation right now, is on the offensive side of the ball, which is number 39. And that's taking a little bit of a step back from last year where they were number 27. Now, what's helping Missouri, or what's in Missouri's favor in terms of projections of conference standings, not their power rating, is that from a schedule difficulty standpoint within conference play, it's number 14 out of 16. So Missouri has the third easiest SEC conference slate. They don't play Texas. They don't play Tennessee, Ole Miss, LSU, Georgia, Florida. So Missouri actually has a somewhat beneficial draw. Also, Mike, if we look at it here, Missouri doesn't leave Columbia until week eight when they go to Auburn. I mean, the first six games of the season are all at home. That includes a trip or a visit from South Carolina and a visit from Alabama. Those are two games in which right now my numbers project Missouri to be an underdog. So if they get those at home, I mean, certainly the season outlook is looking much different. I've got four games this season that are projected to be one score games for Missouri. South Carolina, as we just mentioned, at Auburn in week eight, week 11, Texas A&M comes to Columbia. And then in week 14, a trip to Fayetteville. So, I mean, as it is for many teams, if you win your one possession games, you win your close games, you're certainly going to have a season that you're excited about. But looking at the conference slate, even though it's number 14 out of 16, still just a 30% chance to win at least five games in conference play. I've got 4-4 as the most likely for the Tigers.
Mm-hmm. And then if I'm sitting here and I'm a Missouri fan, though, like Arkansas, you got a win probability today of 57%. I'm feeling pretty confident because they have, I know history, maybe that there's no metric for that, but they have owned Arkansas. So if we can win a 50-50 type game, that's in our benefit. And then in my mind, I know your models has got Oklahoma there as well, but two of the most difficult games for Missouri this year, Alabama and A&M, both under at or under 40% win probability, but they get 2 weeks to prepare for each of them, and they're both at home. And if they could just split one of those, and I mean, in a fantastic year, win them both, you know, these are the games that you got to swing if you're going to have a special team and potentially make a run to the playoff.
And it's worth noting there too, Mike. Agree with everything you said. It's worth noting A&M's off a bye as well when they play them, but Alabama is not. Alabama is at home to Vanderbilt. We know what Vanderbilt did to Alabama a year ago, so they're not going to be overlooking that. Alabama's at home to Vanderbilt the week before they travel to Missouri. So yes, Missouri will have what I call a scheduling dynamic advantage against Alabama there in week 7 at home. So it's a 21% win expectancy for the Tigers, but then you factor in some of these other things like that rest advantage, and perhaps you feel better about it if you're a Tiger fan.
Yeah. All right, so let's jump into the other one I wanted to get to, Florida, because Florida's a hot team. You said, again, power rated top 15, I believe, but this is not going to have the Billy Napier fan club happy, Kelly, that they were so many projected losses. Can you break down the Florida Gators for us?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same story that Florida has had really in the Billy Napier era, is a decent to good team. And this is actually, I'm projecting this to be the best team that Billy Napier's had, which if I'm an AD, that's what I'm seeking is, hey, is my coach making the program better? Is he making it the team more talented? My numbers would suggest yes. So Billy Napier gets there 2022, they're power rated number 30 at the end of the year. 23 is a slight setback, 36. Last year, they're number 19 in my power rating model at the end of the year. This year, they're number 15 coming into this season. The problem is, as it has been for the last 3 or 4 years, the schedule is so incredibly difficult. It's the second most difficult schedule in all of college football coming into this year, based on my numbers right now. Florida plays the second most difficult collection of opposing FBS offenses this year. If we look at the offenses that Florida is going to play on the road at LSU, who I project right now to have the number 4 offense, at Miami, who I project to have number 1. I know some people are going to take exception to that, but that's what the model says right now. Texas, number 15 on offense, at A&M, and they're number 19 on offense. Georgia, at a neutral site, of course, number 8 on offense. Ole Miss, on the road, number 17. Tennessee, number 33. You look at all the offenses that Florida is going to play and that this defense is going to have to face week in and week out. I think the Florida defense is going to be pretty good. I've got them number 20, but you look at all the difficult offenses they have to play. Eventually, that takes its toll over the course of a season. So Florida, despite being a top 15 power rated team, despite having a top 20 unit on both sides of the ball, because of this schedule, 7-5 is the most likely record for the Gators. 6-6, 8-4, both in there as well, but just a 23% chance to win at least 5 conference games. We look at their projected one score games, Miami in week 4 on the road, A&M week 7 on the road, Ole Miss week 12 on the road, and Tennessee at home in week 13. Those are the 4 games right now that my model projects to be, you know, within one score, but there's 3 other games that Florida's an underdog of bigger than that, at LSU, Texas at home, and Georgia in Jacksonville. So it's just, it's a murderer's row. And so I don't know what else to say to Florida fans and to people that are detracting from Florida saying, well, they're not that good. I would contend that they are. They're just playing a very difficult schedule. And so I don't know, Mike, I don't know what you think. I don't know what the listeners think. How many games does Billy Napier have to win this year to keep his job? I would be looking less at wins and more about from a power rating standpoint, where are we? Are we still making progress? I get it. At the end of the day, you have to win games. And that's what people are showing up for. That's what they want to see. Hey, they're used to winning national championships at Florida in the last 20 years. That's what they want to see. But golly, the schedule is just so, so difficult. My model thinks Florida's pretty good, but this is just, it's going to be really tough. I've got an 11% chance to win at least 9 regular season games. And I think if you go 9-3 against that schedule, I would certainly be arguing for Florida to be included in the college football playoff as an at-large. Will the committee put them in? I don't know. We saw some 9-3 teams from the SEC last year get snubbed.
Right. Yeah. And I'm so happy you said that, because I did want to mention, and this may be jumping ahead because you may have not done the work for this part just yet, but I do recall last summer-ish, you had, I got to credit you again, all these interesting graphs you put out, but Florida at 8-4, pardon me if I have that wrong, but they should be playoff consideration. Not that you said they would be 8-4, not that you said they're going to make the playoff, but just given the schedule difficulty, I think it was they are the only team in the country that at 8-4 should be in consideration. But again, this is virtually the same schedule, if not even harder.
Yep, you're exactly right, Mike. I have not gotten to that point yet of rolling out that graphic. However, I do know what I call them thresholds. They're CFP at-large discussion thresholds with regular season win totals. I do have the thresholds, and they're actually denoted on all the team projection graphics. And if we go back, if we show again the key, it's the gold numbers that are on the right-hand side. There you go. For Tennessee, it's 9. My number suggests right now, based on the schedule difficulty of Tennessee, that 9-3 would be good enough for Tennessee to be in the discussion for an at-large bid in the CFP. For Florida, it's 8 because they play a more difficult schedule, right? Florida's schedule is the second most difficult. Tennessee's is the 25th. So somewhere in between 2 and 25, that threshold moves from 8 to 9. Another thing to note here, though, is those thresholds change throughout the year. If your schedule ends up being easier than we thought, Florida, maybe you need 9 wins. Tennessee, if your schedule ends up being significantly more difficult than we thought, maybe your threshold ends up being 8. So that's a moving target throughout the year. It's dynamic. It's fluid. Some people get mad about that, because if your team is crossing over a threshold, which some do, like Boise State was doing it last year between 11-1 and 12-0. Some teams do cross that threshold kind of on a weekly basis, but you have to draw the line somewhere. And so I have a process that I'm comfortable with where I draw the line. But I think it's helpful to have that fluid and dynamic target, because it's being reactive to what we're seeing on the football field. And I think that's what's important here. So yes, that graphic will be coming. Don't you worry. And I am sure it is going to create as much outrage this year, if not more, than it did last year, when I suggest that some teams from the SEC, because that's how the schedule difficulty works out with the power ratings, some teams from the SEC should be in consideration for an at-large bid into the CFP with an 8-4 record. And there are going to be hundreds of people in my reply saying that I'm an absolute idiot and that there's no way in heck that a 4-loss team should ever be in the playoff. And I will just smile, probably hit the mute button, and continue on with my day.
Yeah, and paid for by Commissioner Greg Sankey. Well, and then here's another one, very similar. Oklahoma, who I wanted to hit you with, but same thing. That magic number as of, or, you know, again, mid-June is 8 to put Oklahoma in consideration, just because what a gauntlet the Sooners are facing. Man, they knew they were getting a step up in competition coming over to the Southeastern Conference. I don't know that they quite expected this slate, though. They've got the first 2 years.
So, yeah, Mike, thank you for bringing that up. If I'm and I got to be careful, because I work in a conference office. My day job is as an associate commissioner in a Division I conference office. Now, we don't sponsor football in the office that I work in, but I do need to be careful, because I know how these schedules are made, and I know that the people that are making them, the parameters, the principles, the priorities that go into these schedules, why it's driven with TV, all that, like, it's a very agreed upon process from the whole membership. So this isn't Greg Sankey and his staff just saying, here's going to be the schedule this year. Like, it's a very, very difficult puzzle. All of that being said, if I'm Oklahoma, I'm looking and saying, guys, conference office, help me out here, because this is 2 years in a row that my schedule is really, really tough. And hey, you're in the SEC, you should expect that. But here's my beef is I look south a little bit down across the Red River, and I see in Austin, 2 years in a row, they've had a pretty favorable schedule, relatively speaking, to what an SEC conference slate looks like. And this year's no exception. So I'm starting to be like, all right, guys, when is it going to be our turn to kind of get that Texas treatment, if you will? But Oklahoma, they have the number 4 most difficult schedule in conference play. When you look at the 8-game slate, it's the fourth most difficult. If you look at the overall 12, it is the fifth most difficult in the entire country. That is, of course, held up there by a home game against Michigan in week 2, who I have as the number 14 power rated team. I do expect Michigan to be much better this year than they were a year ago or than the record indicated a year ago. But Oklahoma, the stride for me is on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, Mike, they were bad last year on offense. And when you look at Oklahoma's 10-year history, from 2015 to 2023, they were never worse than 13th, and they were only outside the top 10 once on the offensive side of the ball. Last year, they cratered to number 83. I mean, it was really bad. That's worse than average in FBS, let alone the Power Four or certainly the SEC. Like, you're going to get hammered with an 83 offensive unit rating, in the SEC. I'm projecting number 30 this year. So I do think the offense is going to take a big step forward. The defense, which was 17 a year, which has progressed since Brett Venables got there. They were 63 and 22 on defense, 29 and 23, 17 last year. I am projecting number 12 this year on the defensive side of the ball. So the defense continues to improve. I've got the number 16 right now in the model, but because the schedule is so difficult, because the conference slate is so tough, I mean, it's 50% chance to win at least 4 games in the SEC play. 37% chance to go at least 8-4. And yes, right now, if they went 8-4, my numbers would suggest they should be in the conversation for an at-large bid. And again, that varies based on who else is in the conversation the later we get in the season. So if you're 8-4, but there's a ton of other contenders that are there at, you know, their thresholds are better, you get pushed down that list, certainly. But 8-4 is kind of the mark right now that I would have for Oklahoma to be targeting. You know, I talked about for Florida how they play the second most difficult collection of opposing FBS offenses. Well, for Oklahoma, it's the fifth most difficult collection of opposing FBS defenses. So I talked about this offense being number 30 this year, a vast improvement. They're going to be tested week in and week out. On average, they're playing the fifth most difficult defense that anybody's going to see all year on a weekly basis. So their work's cut out for them. I do think they're moving in the right direction, and we will see if in 2026 or beyond, Oklahoma can ever catch a break relative to Texas, I'll say, when it comes to that conference slate.
Yeah, well, first we got to figure out, Kelly, if we're going 8 or 9. So, I mean, we can't even get that resolved. But I think your graph does the best job I've seen. This is something we've talked about all offseason with Oklahoma, how imperative it will be to start 5-0. And again, we're talking to have a really good season, because even if we're 4-1, heading into the Texas game, I mean, it is just one landmine after another with only one game post October where Oklahoma's got a better than 55% chance win probability, and that's Missouri. So if they're not starting off 5-0, and that is not a given, not with Michigan coming to town, not with Auburn coming to town, but if they don't start 5-0, I think this is going to be a really rough year again for the Sooners.
37% chance, Mike, right now, 37% chance based on my current numbers that Oklahoma starts the year 5-0. Three of them you would expect wins. The two that you just mentioned, those are the two that could trip them up. They're both at home, though, as we just talked about. So I think that can help them. But a 37% chance to be 5-0 going into the Red River shootout. And yeah, you're right. They have to have it, because Ole Miss, 54% win expectancy. Missouri, 74% win expectancy. The only games after week 6 in which Oklahoma is currently projected as a favorite.
Well, speaking of Auburn, how about we tackle them next, Kelly, because that's a team. It's so hard to put my finger on. They could take a huge step forward. I think that's the expectation, but what do the numbers say?
So important context for Auburn is they were among, if not the, we'll say unluckiest teams last year. And how I'm defining unlucky is, and Bill Connolly does a great job with this, is post-game win expectancy. So basically you look at, you know, all the stats from a game and you figure out, you know, which ones are the predictive ones, which ones help determine or over the course of a season, which ones indicate you're going to have success, you're going to win the game. If you look at those stats from Auburn's games last year, they grossly underachieved with regard to their win-loss record, meaning they were unlucky, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many, you know, statisticians, they were unlucky to have the record that they had. I think they were better than their record indicated last year. So that's important context for Auburn here. I had them number 36 in the power ratings a year ago. I'm projecting number 18 this year. The defense certainly going to be the better of the two units up into the top 20. The offense, this could be the best offense that Auburn has seen since 2020. And you know, 2020 is kind of a weird year, so maybe even since 2019, this could be the best offense that Auburn has seen. It's still not great. It's number 48 in the nation. So that number's got to get better for Auburn to get back to the place of contending for a spot in Atlanta, contending for a CFP, and trying to win a national championship. But they are moving, in the right direction. And so Auburn has the number 12 most difficult schedule overall. It's middle of the pack with SEC schedule difficulty. It's number 9 out of 16. So a very, average difficulty of in-conference schedule. But we look at the games that could maybe flip the season, those one possession games. There's 5 of them right now. And they start right out of the gate on a Friday night. They're going to Baylor to open the season the week or the day before most teams are kicking off on that Saturday. Although we do have quite a few Thursday night games, but the Friday night, Auburn at Baylor, 63% win expectancy. So my numbers do like Auburn in that game, but it is a one score projected game. And for me, Mike, that's how I define toss-ups. And a 50% win expectancy is not the same as a 70% win expectancy, and they're both projected to be one-score games. But in general terms, I kind of define toss-ups in college football as one-score projected games. That's what this one is. You look at week 4, they go on the road to Oklahoma. The very next week, on the road at Texas A&M, both of those games projected to be one-score games. I mean, then you're off a week, thank goodness, because then you got Georgia coming to the Plains a week after that. Now, that one's projected to be a multi-score game right now, but just that three-game stretch, the four-week stretch from week 4 to week 7, at Oklahoma, at Texas A&M, off, and then Georgia at home. I mean, and this is an average difficulty schedule in the SEC. I mean, that's insane right there. After Georgia, it doesn't get any better. Missouri comes to Auburn. That's a one-score projected game. And then they have to go to Arkansas in another one-score projected game. Now, it does help. They get Kentucky and Vanderbilt, who, are quality teams by the standard of Power Four, but in the SEC, certainly near the bottom. And then, of course, you end with the Iron Bowl and, 23% win expectancy, but just throw that out. Like, literally throw that out because that game is so crazy, so wild. You never know what's going to happen. I've got a 49% chance to win at least 8 games, a 22% chance to win at least 9. You look at, their chance to reach 6 wins in conference play, because, again, that's what I'm projecting right now to be that tied for second, at least. It's 10%. So, Auburn fans, I'm giving you a 1-in-10 shot to, be in the mix for a spot in Atlanta. That feels right to me. I mean, I don't disagree with that, but that's what the model's saying. It's a difficult overall schedule. It's average for SEC play, but I do think Auburn is trending in the right direction. At number 18, this is the best Auburn team overall. I talked about the offense. At number 18, this is the best Auburn team overall since the Tigers finished number 8 in 2019.
Yeah, just look at the watchability score. I mean, it's off the charts for every non-cupcake game. This is Auburn is like it's like a car accident. You don't want to see it, but you can't look away either. You know what?
I love it. And yeah, Mike, another graphic I'll be putting out. We talked about the thresholds for CFP at-large discussion conversation. I'll put out the watchability score graphics here in the coming weeks, and it's going to, list who has the highest average watchability of all these teams throughout the year. Auburn is certainly going to be in contention with 7 games, at least 9.2 or better on the watchability scale. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah. Well, another one that's similar, Kelly, is South Carolina. So, again, a huge year last year, exceeded expectations for Shane Beamer and company. What does the model say about the Gamecocks this fall?
I'm going to start right where we just picked up. I said 7 out of 12, 9.2 or better for Auburn. As I scroll over to South Carolina, I believe if I'm counting right, that's 7 out of 12, 9.4 or better for the Gamecocks. I mean, yeah, like tune into South Carolina games this year because I think they're going to be awesome. That's not counting an 8.9 to start the year on Sunday. It's a standalone game. Sunday night, neutral site, Virginia Tech, a 76% win expectancy, which is a multi-score game, but just barely there for South Carolina. So the numbers project this team to be good yet again. Man, I thought they were a pretty quality team last year. I thought they were among the biggest snubs in the CFP. Everybody kind of made a stink about Alabama, and I'll listen to that argument. I actually think South Carolina got it even a more raw of a deal. I think South Carolina had a resume that was even more deserving than Alabama to make it into the college football playoff a year ago. I had them number 12 in the year-end power ratings, which is the best they've been in the last decade plus. They're number 17 for me coming into this year. Now, the offense is number 24. Which is the best it's been since 2018. The defense number 15 after coming in number 12 last year as well. So I think this is a really quality team. Conference schedule difficulty number 8 out of 16. So again, like Auburn, right there in the middle, but overall number 7 most difficult. And Mike, if you break it down, offense and defense, and we've done that for a couple teams already, South Carolina faces the 4th most difficult collection of opposing FBS defenses and the 4th most difficult collection of opposing FBS offenses. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why the watchability scores are so high, right? Like, these are really, really quality teams and units that South Carolina, one, that they have on their roster there in Columbia, but two, that they will be facing throughout the course of this season. Let's look at their projected one-score games. There are right now 6 of them, so half of South Carolina's games are projected to be, you know, within one score. Week 4 at Missouri, week 8 at home against Oklahoma, week 9 at home against Alabama, week 10, stop me if you're hearing a theme, at Ole Miss. That's 3 weeks in a row before getting a breather. And then week 12, they go to A&M in another one score game before closing the year in what's always a very fun game at home against Clemson. I think South Carolina fans will probably take exception. I've got a 43% win expectancy for the Gamecocks at home. I think most of them probably think they should be favored in that game. There's a long way to go till we get to that one. We will see. It's certainly possible South Carolina could be favored by the time that game rolls around. But right now, 43% win expectancy, just under 50 there. 40% chance to reach at least 8 regular season wins. Let's look at that threshold of 6 SEC wins, 11%. So just better than Auburn at 11% to get to that 6-2 mark in conference play. But Mike, you talked about the importance of Oklahoma starting 5-0. I'll say the same thing about South Carolina. I mean, they need to start 5-0. Their pass a little bit easier than Oklahoma's, but the one game that you're certainly keeping an eye on is that road trip to Missouri in week 4. But if South Carolina can start 5-0, then they're off before they go to LSU. And let me look really quickly. LSU's off as well before South Carolina. So no rest advantage there for the Gamecocks before their trip to Death Valley there on the Bayou. But it's going to be tough. Once LSU hits, there is only one game the rest of the season that's projected to be higher than a 58% win expectancy, and that's a non-conference game, week 13 against Coastal Carolina. I would like to say, South Carolina, thank you for scheduling your November, what people say, the November cupcakes for the SECs. Thanks for scheduling Coastal Carolina. Like, that's, you know, that's at least a FBS team, Group of 5 team that has had some success in recent years. I think their offense might be decent this year. Certainly I expect South Carolina to win, but it's not an FCS opponent. So people that are throwing shots at the SEC in November about the FCS cupcakes, take those shots elsewhere. Oh, shoot. I guess they got South Carolina State in week 2. Mike, never mind. Scratch all that. Whoops.
Well, one thing that I think could really dictate, I know everybody's excited about Sellers. I am too. I think he's phenomenal. But given the fact that we have so many projected one-score games here, South Carolina, we got that reputation with the Beamer ball, special teams. They have got to get that figured out quickly, because new kicker, new punter, new holders, new snappers, every aspect of the special teams unit is new for the Gamecocks this year. And that very well could make or break their season. Again, with so many one-score games, that's how you create those differences, by being elite on special teams. And I'm not saying South Carolina for sure will be, but that's an area where they really got to nail it if they're going to have a good season, I think.
Well, I agree, Mike, and I talked earlier about the impact of special teams in the model. And certainly in the preseason, it's almost negligible, and it remains that way for most teams, even throughout the year. However, 2022 South Carolina comes to mind. I still remember talking about them at the time about, this is a unit that is impacting the overall power rating of the team. Like, they were number 1 in the country on special teams for me in 2022. And when you are that elite, when you're that good, or on the other end of the spectrum, if you're that bad, you can affect your overall power rating. And South Carolina in 2022 did. And you can steal points and you can steal games on special teams if you are elite. Beamer ball is a thing. And if South Carolina is able to get back to that kind of 2022 level of success, then yes, that could be the difference between a really, really good season and a trip to the college football playoff.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of another team that Carolina is going to play that could reach those heights, Kelly, how about Texas A&M, year 2 under Coach Mike Elko? They got off to the hot start, fizzled late. This is a fan base that is dying for a winner here. What does the model say about the Aggies?
So the model is viewing Texas A&M pretty favorably right now. I've got them number 11 overall. They're top 20 on both sides of the ball. So offense and defense and their overall then power rating, all projected to be better coming into this year than they were at the end of the 2024 season. So I do think Texas A&M takes a step forward here. It's the 10th most difficult schedule in the country overall, but it's only 12th out of 16 within SEC play. So it's on the easier end of conference slate. They don't play Alabama. They don't play Georgia. No Oklahoma. No Ole Miss. No Tennessee. But at Notre Dame in the non-conference certainly is what keeps this as a top 10 most difficult schedule overall. There's only one game, Mike, on the schedule right now that A&M's projected to be an underdog of more than one possession. And that is the final game of the regular season, Friday at Texas. And again, kind of like the Iron Bowl, you can almost throw out, you know, the numbers and the spread and the win expectancies in those rivalry type games, because we see time and time again them not go to script, them not go to plan. So when that's the only game on A&M's schedule that my numbers right now project them as a multi-score underdog, I think that bodes well for A&M. Now, at the same time, they're a projected, you know, one score favorite or dog in six games. So there's still half of their schedule that are projecting to be really close games. It starts with Notre Dame in week three. The only other one right now they're a projected underdog, though, is week nine at LSU. So only three games right now with less than a 50% win expectancy. I've got a 37% chance to reach at least nine regular season wins, which is that threshold for A&M as things stand right now, and a 28% chance to get to 6-2 in conference play. So I think Texas A&M has the pieces in place to have a special season. I mean, we look at their watchability scores. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 there that are 9.3 or better, 8 at a 9.0 or better. So it's a common theme, right, with the watchability. A lot of SEC teams have a lot of really watchable games because in my model's, you know, view, these are some of the strongest teams in all of college football, and they're playing each other. Just another reason not to go to nine conference games from a math standpoint. So A&M certainly, I think, going to have a good season. And if you win the games in which you're favored, which, again, that sounds like a very broad statement, but right now, A&M, win the games in which my model makes you a favorite, I believe at worst, you're going to be in the discussion for a CFP at-large berth.
Yeah, and my goodness, Kelly, you're right. So seemingly nine non-cupcake games, eight of them, watchability nine or higher. I mean, that's insane. But I think if you were to tell any fan base, well, maybe short of Ohio State and Georgia, you know, the guys that have been at the top of the sport, any fan base like an A&M that says, hey, if you could pull one upset this fall, your odds of going to the college football playoff are very strong. I think most would take that. So the A&M's right there on that doorstep. They just got to kick it in. Again, there's always upsets and things of that nature, but at Notre Dame, who knows what they're going to look like? LSU, Texas. You beat one of those and you take care of all the rest, I think A&M's going to the playoff.
I agree with you, Mike. And that final piece you said is always the kicker, because I always like to say the door swings both ways. So mm-hmm. like in my what if standings and my what if rankings, everyone's so quick to turn those one possession losses to wins, but everybody forgets to turn those one possession wins to losses. So yes, pull one upset A&M, but you've got to take care of business in those other games. You can't stub your toe in games that you're a favorite. And that is, by and large, usually the trickiest part for all these contenders. I mean, look at Alabama last year. It's the stubbing of the toe that held them back, not the upset or the great wins here or there. It's when you stub your toe unexpectedly, it nullifies those great wins that you pull off in upset settings.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about Ole Miss, Kelly? Your model very high on the Rebels. Once again, Lane Kiffin's got it rolling down there in Oxford. I am not as high on Ole Miss, so I was a little surprised to see a top 10 ranking for the Rebels. Can you break down Ole Miss for us?
If I remember correctly, Mike, you were scratching your head with me a little bit last year when end of year ranking I had for a power rating standpoint, not deservingness, power rating, I had Ole Miss as the fourth best team in college football. And I think what they had three losses is what it was. And so mm-hmm. that caught a little bit of ire on social media. But when you look at it through that frame of mind, I actually expect Ole Miss to take a slight step back this year in regard to their overall talent, not necessarily their record, but their overall talent. So I am still giving a 66% chance to win at least nine regular season games, a 35% chance to win double digits. I mean, if you look at their schedule, Mike, for me right now in the power rating model, there's only one game that they're a projected underdog of greater than one score, and that's week eight at Georgia. And just about anybody's going to be, you know, an underdog when you have to go on the road to Georgia. So that's where Ole Miss is kind of a significant underdog, I'll say. They also have less than a 50% win expectancy on the road at Oklahoma in the following week. But those are the only two games, as things stand right now, that I have Ole Miss as a projected underdog. So you look at their conference schedule difficulty, it's number 13 out of 16. So it's in the top, you know, four easiest conference schedules. No Alabama, no Auburn, no Missouri, Tennessee, Texas, A&M, all of those teams miss Ole Miss this year. They get Mississippi State. They get Kentucky. The only way it's better is if you could get Vanderbilt in there instead of Georgia or something like that, right? So Ole Miss is certainly, I believe, going to be in a position to have a lot of success this year. Last year, I had them in top five, both sides of the ball. A little bit of a step back. Defense is looking like number nine for me right now. Offense is in the top 20 still. LSU at home in week five, South Carolina in week 10, Florida in week 12. Games to keep your eye on, certainly. But I think Ole Miss can make some noise. I think they were very disappointed with their season last year, obviously. And I think they probably felt like they wasted some talent. And I would agree with that. I think this is the year they're going to come back maybe a little bit more focused and be able to maybe surprise some people this year. I'd have them in that mix for a spot in Atlanta as well as a college football playoff berth.
Yeah, and I know there's no way to really quantify this, Kelly, but you said it there with the expectations coming in, the last dance, all this. You know, really, it was all the chips were on the table. That was the offseason narrative all year. And then they dropped to Kentucky early in the season. So this team, those expectations are not going to be there. It's almost like, I don't know if you follow Bill Simmons at all, but the Ewing theory, you know, one of your best players of all time goes on, retires, and then somehow the team immediately after gets better. That could be Ole Miss in the SEC this year.
Well, as a kid from Indiana, a Pacers fan, yeah, I'm familiar with that and the Knicks of the late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah, I'm familiar with the Knicks and the Ewing theory and all that. So, in all seriousness, I agree with you. I do believe that could happen here with Ole Miss. I mean, 9-3 is my most likely record. So I think that says it all. The model is a believer. And while I'm on it, go Sirs. Game three, let's go. Or game four, excuse me, let's go.
Yeah, it's a big one tonight. Well, it's also a big one anytime we got you talking Tennessee, Kelly. Come on. Can you believe I waited this long to talk Tennessee? Let's break down the Vols and how are they looking after reaching the college football playoff last fall?
I really thought we were going to lead off the show with Tennessee, Mike, but I appreciate your approach to making sure you're remaining as fair as possible. Everyone knows you're a Tennessee fan, but you do everybody in the conference justice. So credit to you for that. Tennessee, I expect them to be really good again this year. I know the quarterback and how it worked out with Nico, and you know, everybody says, well, good for Tennessee. They have their principles, they have their morals, but they don't have a quarterback. I'm not ready to say they don't have a quarterback. I do have questions on the offensive side of the ball. I'm projecting number 33, which would be the worst of Josh Heupel's tenure. The worst they've been so far was 23 a year ago. So this would be the worst, you know, offensive unit projection since 2020 or 2019, if you throughout the COVID year. But I still think the defense is going to be really good. I've got them number six. And so overall, we're looking at number 12 right now. And there is some uncertainty. I do want to see what this offense looks like, but Josh Heupel has earned the benefit of the doubt on that side of the ball from me, at least. And so as I'm trying to figure out how to make sense of all the pieces and how they come together, Kelly Ford, the person, is going to give some benefit of the doubt there, even if the K Ford ratings model is not. All of that being said, though, we've already talked about Tennessee 25 schedule difficulty. That's the easiest of any team in the SEC. It's a top 25 most difficult schedule in the country. It's the easiest of the 16 team conference. If you look at just the conference schedule difficulty, only Texas has an easier road this year. So I think that bodes very well for Tennessee. 9-3 is the most likely record, followed by actually 10-2. 10-2 is very, very slightly more likely of an outcome than 8-4. I mean, they're essentially similar or the same, but 10-2, ever so slightly, the second most likely outcome for Tennessee this year. And if you go down their schedule and really evaluate it game by game, Tennessee should not take anyone for granted. I hope they don't for their sake. But if they take care of business in the games they're supposed to, as we kind of talked about it a minute ago, it really comes down to, you know, a 3 or 4 game season. Georgia at home in week three, that's going to be a tough one. But you're at home. Can you steal that one and set yourself up? I think if Tennessee wins that game, I mean, I'm almost ready to say, all right, like college football playoff at large berth, at least here we come. Because the rest of the schedule, you know, week eight at Alabama, that's going to be really, really tough. But the Alabama monkey is off the back, right? Like they have proven we can beat Alabama. We can hang with Alabama. So that's not an impossible game. Certainly Alabama's a favorite. It's not impossible. Week 10, Oklahoma, but that's at home. So I got to think that Tennessee's feeling good about that one. And then a week 13 at the Swamp, the Tennessee-Florida rivalry. What's Florida's season look like at that point, though, right? Like, what's their record in that game? Is Billy Napier still the coach? I believe he should be, almost regardless of what the record is, for the reasons I outlined earlier. But has their season gone off the deep end? Are they in turmoil? Is that game actually easier for Tennessee than we're projecting right now? Or is Florida having a great year and that becomes harder? Those are the games I'm looking at for Tennessee. And those four games, if you can go 2-2, certainly, if Tennessee goes 2-2 in those games, I'd be really surprised if they're not in the college football playoff, because I'm not expecting them to drop, you know, any other game along the way unexpectedly. It's possible, but I think 2-2 in those four, I'm feeling really good if I'm a Vol fan.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're familiar with this term, Kelly, battered Vol syndrome, but I believe I suffer mightily from it. I'm kind of in the camp. I think Tennessee could regress as far as 7-5, but looking at your model here, I mean, 8-4 has got an 89% chance as of today. I feel it better. So if nothing else, I just would like to personally say thank you for getting me out of this battered Vol syndrome.
I am here to serve you, Mike. This is my appreciation for you having me on the show. Is I'll manipulate the numbers for Tennessee. No, in all seriousness, 89% chance, though, to win at least 8 regular season games. I do view that as the floor. I mean, yes, there's an 11% chance that they fail to reach the 8 win mark, but I think 8-4 is the floor for Tennessee this year. I really do. And this could be a team that the model learns a lot from, though, this year, given some of the uncertainty, especially on the offensive side of the ball, of how it looks. This could be a team that in the summer of 2026, the model is viewing and really learning from as we make projections for the 2026 season at that time.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about LSU, Kelly? I know people are very high on them. The model's high on them. This is another team where I get it. I get all the hype, but I'm still kind of uncertain about the Tigers. What does the model say about LSU?
Well, I just gotta say, Mike, I've been releasing the team projection graphics on social media with a poll. I put all four teams in there, and it's in order of, you know, power rating. I just kind of cycle through. LSU was in 25 polls and never got picked as the winner. I eventually just said, I'm making an executive decision. I'm going to post LSU. So, Mike, I need the LSU fans watching this, guys. I need you to follow me at K4 Ratings, because clearly I do not have any LSU support in my current social media following. I mean, it was sad for LSU. Ole Miss suffered the same fate. I eventually had to post them because they couldn't win it. So that's kind of just a funny aside. But for this team, I think the pressure's on building for Brian Kelly a little bit. However, from a power rating standpoint, I think this could be the best team that he's had in Baton Rouge. It's number 9 right now, which is the exact same overall power rating the Tigers were in 2022 and 2023. So Brian Kelly, I say he's got a little pressure on him. He hasn't had a team power rated worse than 15 in his so far 3 years in Baton Rouge. The offense could be a step forward this year, up to number 4 is what I'm projecting. They were 10 a year ago after being number 1 with Jaden Daniels back in 2023. But it's the defense. The defense continues to make strides, at least in the model's eyes. It was really bad in 23, number 71. I mean, that's unfathomable for an LSU team. Like, LSU, just the program, should never have a defense that's bad, ever. And they were 71 in 23, huge step forward last year, up to number 33. Now they're number 23, or that's what they're projecting. I think this is going to be a really good team. The problem for LSU, if you want to call it that, it's the number 9 most difficult schedule overall, number 6 in terms of average defense faced, so that this offense that I'm projecting number 4 is going to be tested week in and week out. There's only one game, though, on the schedule. They're a projected underdog of more than a touchdown, and that's Alabama on the road, week 11, in a game that is one of my favorites every single year. I know many people feel that way, just as a neutral, or as a neutral fan there. But also, Clemson in week 1 is massive. And I feel like LSU's had a couple of these games in recent years where it's like week 1's going to set the tone. Are we going to win and really, you know, springboard into our season? Or are we going to lose and have, you know, a real decision to make? Are we coming together and band together and move forward? Or is it all going to crumble? This trip to Clemson in week 1 is big. Because if LSU gets that one, Ole Miss in week 5, A&M in week 9, Alabama game we talked about, Oklahoma in week 14 to close the regular season on the road. But if LSU can get week 1, it's a huge inflection point for them, I believe. And I don't like saying do or die in week 1. It's not a must win. Like, it's not. But if they could win that game, the outlook for LSU season all of a sudden looks so much better. If they lose it, you know, it puts a little bit of a damper on it. I've got a 52% chance to win at least 9 games. LSU's right now, their threshold is 8, but they are right on that border. I talked about some teams straddling that line. They're right on that border between 8 and 9. So, you know, when I run the numbers later in August, it could be 9 already. That's why I'm looking at the 9 number. 52% chance for LSU to win 9 games. That would at least put them in the conversation. 40% chance to at least be tied for second at the end of the regular season in the SEC with maybe a trip to Atlanta. So I really like LSU this year. The schedule's tough, but I think this could be Brian Kelly's best team that he's had. Certainly the best defense that he's had since his first year and maybe, you know, in his entire tenure.
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in curses, Kelly, but when they didn't have Florida State on a schedule week one and Florida State goes 2-10. I mean, I'm starting to buy into it a little bit here, but if I'm an LSU fan, I'm telling myself that if we go on the road and we beat Clemson, you know, maybe this is a completely different animal and maybe we are legitimate national championship contenders. If they're winning at Clemson week one, I don't see how anyone is not buying LSU stock at that point.
It's huge. And it's also huge, Mike, for the entire SEC. Because if LSU goes on the road and beats the consensus best team in the ACC, now we still have a whole season to play out. I mean, it could be that there are 3 other teams in the ACC that end up better than Clemson. But for early season talking points, if LSU goes on the road and beats the ACC favorite right out of the gate, that's going to be a difficult circle for ACC fans to be talking in.
Mm-hmm. All right, how about speaking of LSU, we were talking about the love for that Alabama game. How about the Crimson Tide year 2, Kalen DeBoer? Please tell us the Crimson Tide fans, Kelly, that we're not going to struggle like we did last fall.
I don't think Alabama's going to struggle this year. Now, to be fair, I didn't think they were going to struggle. You know, last year, I still contend they had a resume that was worthy of inclusion in the CFP. So, you know, they lost one too many games in the committee's eyes. It put it in the committee's hands and the committee did what they did. But I think Alabama, this is kind of my favorite, you know, outlook on Alabama here this year, Mike, as I've been talking about them with some others. I'm projecting number 5 on defense. And you might say, well, yeah, it's Alabama. That would be the first time Alabama's been top 5 in my unit ratings since 2019. So, yes, they've been top 10 every year since then. But this could be the best Alabama defense we've seen for, you know, 6 years. And on offense, I do expect them to be better than they were each of the last 2 years. I've got the number 5 on that side of the ball as well. Overall, number 4, as we mentioned here, Alabama, though, you know, 13th most difficult schedule overall. It's open up at Florida State. I've got a 91% win expectancy at that game. But, you know, what does Florida State look like this year? They're one of the biggest question marks that the model has and that many people have. Alabama, though, faces the most difficult collection of opposing FBS defenses this year. No team in college football plays a more difficult defense week in and week out than the Crimson Tide. Just humor me for a second here, Mike. I'm going to look at kind of the top 30-ish defenses that Alabama plays. Florida State's 31, and that's on the road, by the way. Wisconsin's 24. Georgia on the road, number 4. Missouri on the road, number 21. Tennessee's number 6. South Carolina on the road is number 15. LSU's 23. Oklahoma's 12. Auburn on the road, number 19. I just counted that up. That is 9 top 31 defenses that Alabama's going to play this year. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them on the road. They're going to be tested. I mean, this is going to be really difficult for the Alabama offense. But all of that being said, Mike, only one game that I'm currently projecting Alabama to be an underdog. That is week 5 at Georgia. I feel like I've said that a lot on this show. At Georgia. Georgia's got a difficult slate, but everyone seems to be going to them. Alabama at Georgia week 5, 41% win expectancy. And then week 9 at South Carolina, that's the only other one score projected game right now, Mike. So all those great teams I just talked about, all those really strong teams, Alabama, a multi-score favorite, more than an 8-point favorite in each of those games, with the exception of course, the Georgia game and at South Carolina. So 9-3 is my threshold. I don't want to say 9-3, though, because Alabama fans know how that plays out. So let's look at 10-2. 10-2, I've got a 67% chance that Alabama wins at least 10 games, 71% chance to reach 6 conference wins. So Alabama is in that group, as we talked about, of favorites to make it to Atlanta. And I do believe Alabama is going to be back in the college football playoff this coming year. I could argue they probably shouldn't have missed out last year, but they did. And I think this year they get it right and they get back in.
Yeah, it's just fascinating to look at, Kelly, because according to your rankings, they play 7 preseason top 25 teams. And yes, they are projected to beat six of them, but consistency, that was a real issue for Alabama last season in Kalen DeBoer's debut. So they've got to get that turned around, because when you're playing seven projected ranked teams, being inconsistent, once again, that's going to cost you a playoff spot. I don't care how good you are.
Completely agree. And then lump in some of the non-conference games. That's two more in the top 41. So yeah, it's really difficult. And you're right. Consistency is going to be the key. And there's some tricky road games in there. I mean, of course, we talked about Georgia at Missouri, out South Carolina. Of course, the Iron Bowl is what it is. I wouldn't want to play this schedule, but that's everybody up and down the SEC.
Well, speaking of consistency, how about Georgia, Kelly? They are right now the peak of consistency in the conference. What does the K-Ford rating say about the Dogs?
Mike, you would have thought Georgia had the worst season ever last year based on the commentary around the Dogs. And like, yeah, they fell short of their standard, because their standard is win a national championship. That's the standard Kirby Smart brought from Alabama under Nick Saban and installed in Athens, Georgia. They still won the SEC. They were still the number two team in the playoff. Of course, they lose in the quarterfinal game against Notre Dame, but that's the game that was delayed a day because of the horrific terrorist attack in New Orleans. But there's a lot of other things going on around that game that potentially could have impacted how that game was played and the outcome of that one. When you look at Georgia this year, I got them number two in my model, and they're top 10 on both sides of the ball. They're top five on defense. They're favored in every single game they play. I mean, that's all I can really say about Georgia. You look at the games that are projected one score, a couple early, you know, Tennessee on the road in week three, Alabama at home in week five. So, I mean, theoretically, Georgia could be 2-2 after four games. If they beat Marshall, you beat Austin Peay. Tennessee's on the road is a losable game. Alabama at home is a losable game. If they're 2-2, I don't know how the rest of the season goes. Are they strong enough as a group? Is everyone bought in? Or are they thinking about their next transfer portal? They're going to be out of here and going somewhere else. Like, I don't know. It's more likely they're 4-0 after the first four games, but 2-2 is a potential outcome there. But after the Alabama game in week five, there's not another game that Georgia has that's projected to be one score until week 12, when Texas comes to Athens. So, with nine games at a, 77% win expectancy or greater, I feel good about Georgia this year, continuing what they've been building. I know it's a disappointment anytime they don't win a title, but I expect Georgia to certainly be in the mix for Atlanta, and they, I believe, will be back in the college football playoff. And that's the time of year where Kirby can use the Notre Dame game from a year ago and some of the shortcomings from these recent years. I say shortcomings because they didn't win titles. I mean, almost any program out there would kill to be in Georgia's position. Kirby can use those shortcomings to really motivate that team in the playoff, I believe. 65% chance to win at least 10 games. I think Georgia's going to be in the playoff, and I think they're going to be a really hard out once they're there.
Yeah, and last season, you know, maybe some of that being down, again, they won the conference, but the majority of their most difficult games were on the road. Mm-hmm. Now they're all at home, so it flips for them. So, again... Watch out. I mean, the Dogs are not exactly a popular pick to win it all. They're among them, but I don't think they're the front dog. I think that makes them very, very dangerous. I think the team that I'm seeing the most love to win the national championship is Texas, including K-Ford, technically, just based on the rankings. Let's get into the Longhorns. Number one in your ratings here. Can you break down the Longhorns for us?
Yeah, I can. And I candidly, Mike, we talk about K-Ford ratings, the model, Kelly Ford, the person. I was a little surprised that Texas was the number one team in my version one of the 2025 preseason power ratings. I thought Ohio State or Georgia or, you know, even Alabama was going to be, you know, in contention for that. I thought maybe Texas is number three behind the Dogs in Ohio State, but put in all the numbers and this is what has come out, is Texas is the number one team. And, I think they have the best defense in college football. I mean, I'll start right there. I think this defense, and they were number two for me a year ago, they're going to be among, if not the best unit on that side of the ball in the entire country. And I think that combined with this upcoming stat, Mike, how many times on this show just today have I talked about they're playing the third, fourth, fifth, sixth most difficult collection of opposing blank? Texas plays the 43rd most difficult collection of opposing FBS offenses. So it's among the easier opposing offenses at the Power Four level that anybody has. Combine that with the fact that Texas has the number one defense, I'm not sure how many points Texas is going to be giving up on a week-in, week-out basis. Now, they play some good offenses this year, and it starts right out of the gate. You know, a trip to Ohio State, who's a top 10 offense for me. You know, Florida's in the top 20, based on my numbers. Georgia's in the top 10. A&M's in the top 20. So it's not like they don't play any good offenses, but relative to the SEC and the rest of, you know, Power Four, I would take this collection of opposing FBS offenses if I'm Texas. Combine that with the fact that, as we talked about, they have the easiest SEC slate of anybody. And this makes 2 years in a row. So we talked about Oklahoma and how they come in and maybe they have a bone to pick. If I'm in Austin, I'm sending flowers to Birmingham, Alabama, and saying, hey, SEC conference office, thank you very much. We are so happy to be here. This has just been the best 2 years ever. And they're playing really well. But the schedule has certainly been to their advantage. I'm curious to see if and when that changes. If we look at the actual games, there's only two out of 12 that project to be one score games. Interestingly, though, right now, for a number one power rated team, my numbers make Texas an underdog in both of those games, because Texas, the number one power rated team, has to go on the road to number three power rated Ohio State to start the year and number two power rated Georgia in week 12. Unsurprisingly, Mike, both of those games have watchability scores of 10.0 out of 10. You have the number one team in a model going on the road to play number two, going on the road to play number three. It doesn't get better than that from a power rating watchability score standpoint. So certainly week one is filled with great games. The Texas game at Ohio State could be, and in my opinion, is the biggest of the bunch. I talked about LSU. If they're able to go on the road and beat the consensus favorite in the ACC and Clemson in week one, how about Texas? If they go on the road and beat Ohio State, which I would think Ohio State would be the consensus favorite in the Big Ten. I actually don't know that I can say that, because everywhere I look, I feel like I see, yeah, some Ohio States, but Penn State creeps in there, Oregon creeps in there. So I won't call them the consensus favorite, but they're my top power rated Big Ten team. And they are among the favorites, certainly, of the serious contenders in the Big Ten. If Texas goes on the road in week one to Columbus and knocks off the Buckeyes, that puts the Big Ten on notice a little bit for, hey, the SEC. I know you guys have got the last two championships, but the SEC is still here and we're still playing football. That puts the Big Ten on notice. But also, Mike, you look at the schedule, Texas is not an underdog again until at Georgia in week 12. And who knows, by that point, maybe they're a favorite in that game. If Georgia's season's gone off the rails, or if Texas has just really, you know, extended their lead in the power rating model. San Jose State, UTEP, and Sam Houston, guys, that's nothing to write home about. You got a 99%+ win expectancy in each of those. But if you beat Texas, you'll be rolling into Florida coming off an off week at 4-0, probably number one team in the country. Let me look really quickly. Florida's off before the Texas game as well. So no scheduling dynamic advantage there for Texas. But that starts, Mike, the final thing I'll say about Texas, that starts a four-week stretch where Texas does not play at home. Texas plays at home against Sam Houston in week four. They're off in week five, at Florida in week six, Red River Shootout in week seven at the Texas State Fair. Week eight is at Kentucky. Week nine is at Mississippi State. Finally, in week 10, 6 weeks after playing Sam Houston, they're at home against Vanderbilt. Now, Texas gets Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt all in a row. I mean, that any SEC team would probably sign up for that, but two of them are on the road. And so there is a four-week period there, four straight games, where Texas is playing away from Austin. That's something to keep an eye on to see how the Longhorns do in those games.
Wow, Kelly, I just have to congratulate you. I think that is the most anyone has talked about Texas football this offseason without mentioning Arch Manning. So I'm going to send you a gift certificate of your choosing. Let's kick it over to Arkansas, who of course plays Texas, hates Texas. I think they're going to hate playing Texas this year too. What does the model say about the Razorbacks?
There's a lot of red on the projection graphic for Arkansas, and that's not necessarily Arkansas's fault. They're the number 31 power rated team in my model. That's the best they have been since 2021 in my model, when they were number 19. I think the offense and defense are both going to be top 40. Unfortunately for Arkansas, it's the number one most difficult schedule in all of college football. Florida had that mantle last year. Georgia had it for a bit during parts of the season, but Arkansas right now, by my model, plays the most difficult schedule of any team in all of college football. And when you look at the SEC slate, it's number three most difficult. So Arkansas is in a really tough spot. I like Sam Pittman. It's unfortunate that I'm not sure how this year is going to go from a win-loss standpoint. I've got 5-7 as the most likely record, followed by 4-8, and then 6-6. I mean, it's a 35% chance to go bowling. It's just, it's brutal, Mike. I mean, you look at the road games. At number 10, power rating, number 10, Ole Miss. At number 12, Tennessee. At number 9, LSU. At number 1, Texas. You have 4 games on the road against teams power rated in the top 12. And then you're like, okay, well, what about at home? Well, Notre Dame in the non-conference is number 7. A&M's number 11. Auburn's 18. Missouri's number 22. It's just, it's brutal. I mean, it's as hard as it comes. Number 1, most difficult collection of opposing FBS offenses for a defense that I project to be number 40. There's only 2 games all year that I have the Arkansas defense with an advantage against the opposing offense. That is, 3 games, FCS, Alabama, A&M, of course, Arkansas State, and then Mississippi State in week 10. Every other game, Arkansas is at a projected disadvantage when their defense is on the field. So could be a long season from a win-loss record. I still think Arkansas is a pretty decent team. I think FPI had them at like 22 or something. I've got them at 31, which I feel like is pretty good. But if FPI is right, who knows? Maybe Arkansas ends up having a really good year.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to see them top 25 rated in that model. That certainly raised my eyebrow. I'm surprised more models are not high on Vanderbilt. Can you get into why the K-Ford rating is maybe a little bit down on the Commodores after their big year last fall?
Yeah, last fall they finished number 40 for me. I do expect a small step back to number 53. The offense similar to where they were. The defense actually projecting to improve. They were 65 a year ago, now 53. This would be the best defense for Vanderbilt since 2016. So I mean, they're getting better. They're making strides. But it's a difficult schedule. Number 4 overall, number 2 in conference play. Vanderbilt doesn't play A&M, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Georgia, or Florida, and it's still the number 2 most difficult conference schedule. I mean, it's just mind-blowing when you look at all the teams here. I sound like a broken record, so I apologize, but it truly is. You're a favorite in 3 games, Charleston Southern, Georgia State, Utah State. There's 2 more that you're a projected 1-score dog at Virginia Tech and home against Kentucky coming off of an off week. Let me see here. Kentucky, are they off the week before? They are not. Well, they're playing Tennessee Tech at home. So unfortunately, not much of a dynamic advantage there for Vanderbilt. But maybe you get those 2 games and now all of a sudden you're at 5 wins. Can you steal 1 more somewhere else? I don't know. It's a big ask, but I've got a 16% chance to go bowling. I do have 4-8 as the most likely record, followed by 5-7. So, yeah, I mean, it was a great year last year for Vanderbilt, certainly. It was their best team in more than a decade. I think this defense should certainly be, you know, something that they're excited about in Nashville for the first time in a long time, but it's still a difficult schedule. And at the end of the day, Vanderbilt, they got to build on last year, and they have an opportunity to do that this year. And if you have another year like you did a year ago at number 40 or better, certainly the model is going to be taken notice in 12 months' time.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of difficult schedules, goodness, Mississippi State, at least could you give the Bulldog fans some hope that their team's going to be a little bit better than it was last fall?
I can give you that. Mississippi State fans, you were number 67 a year ago. I'm projecting 59 this year. On offense, you were 70. I'm projecting 57. On defense, it was abysmal. I mean, 104, just the bottom fell out of the defense. It was really bad. I'm projecting number 80, so it's still not good, but certainly an improvement. So yes, Mississippi State, I expect you to be better than you were a year ago. The problem is you have the most difficult conference slate of any team in the SEC. It's the third most difficult schedule overall. And after week 4, your highest win expectancy in any game is week 10 against at Arkansas, 27%. I've got you favored in 3 of the first 4 games. And then after that, your highest win expectancy is 27%. So 4-8 is the most likely record, you know, 57% chance to reach at least 4 wins. But I hope you're 3-1 after week 4. I mean, that's where you need to be, if not 4-0. Because it gets real after Northern Illinois in week 4, and it's hard to pinpoint where that win is going to come following that. But Bulldog fans, I do think you'll be better in 25 than you were in 24.
And a lot, if nothing else, Kelly, a lot of high scores on the watchability scale. So these are at least going to be some entertaining football games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, only three with less than a 7.3. And those are the three games I project you to be the favorite in Mississippi State. So yes, lots of 7.3s to eight. So certainly still quality football, because again, Mississippi State is better than average Power Four team at number 59. Unfortunately, though, in the SEC, that might as well be a number 100, right? Because of how good everybody in this conference is.
Right. And last and maybe least this year, at least in my opinion, Kentucky, they just had big transition on the coaching staff. What does the K-Ford model say about the Wildcats?
Yeah, I've got them number 44 overall, which is a slight improvement on a year ago. The offense up a little bit from last year when they were 88, just not good enough. Number 82 this year, defense number 30, which is up from 32 a year ago. So like Mississippi State, I think Kentucky's going to be better, more talented this year than they were a year ago. Number six, most difficult schedule overall. Your favorite in four games, Toledo, Eastern Michigan, and Tennessee Tech in the non-conference, and then Vanderbilt in conference play. But those are the four. And so after that, you're a multi-score underdog, a projected underdog in each of your other eight games. I've got a 26% chance to go bowling for Kentucky. I'm not sure what the Kentucky fans think would be a good season, but 56% chance to win five games here. 5-7 is the most likely outcome. So Kentucky's going to be better than they were a year ago, but certainly there is still some room for Kentucky to improve if they want to be, you know, catching the pack in the SEC.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kelly, I can't thank you enough for giving me so much time. Went way over. You do one heck of a job there, and these are, you know, the best infographics on the entire internet. Before you jump off here, can you remind my audience how to follow you, how to find your work?
Absolutely. Well, Mike, I appreciate it as always. It's always a blast talking SEC with you. You can find me on X at K-Ford Ratings, the website kfordratings.com. I'll be posting more and more content throughout the summer leading into the season. And then once the season gets here, all of those pages on there, power ratings, most deserving rankings, college ball playoff projections, conference standing races, what if rankings, watchability scores, all of that and more updated every single week once the season gets here. That's at kfordratings.com.
Yeah, and I also just want to say, man, your timeline and your following is getting bigger and bigger and bigger every year. So people are noticing all the hard work and the excellent analysis you provide. So I couldn't be happier for you.
Well, thank you, Mike. That means a lot. It's always a pleasure joining you, and the best of luck to you and to the SEC this year. It should be a lot of fun.